The next day was much different than the previous. In the morning, the three of us reassembled in the interrogation room over a silent breakfast of coffee and bread. Then Bookish loaned me an electric razor, which was not exactly sharp. Since I hadn't planned ahead and brought my toothbrush, I gargled as best I could. Then the questioning started. Stupid, petty legal torture. This went on at a snail's pace until noon.
"Well, I guess that about does it," said Fisherman,
laying his pen down on the desk. As if by prior agreement, the two detectives sighed simultaneously. So I sighed too. They were obviously stalling for time, but obviously they couldn't keep me here forever. One business card in a dead woman's wallet does not constitute sufficient cause for detention. Even if I didn't have an alibi, they'd have to strap me down at least until the fingerprinting and autopsy yielded a more plausible suspect.
"Well,"
said Fisherman, pounding the small of his back as he stretched,
"about time for lunch."
"As you seem to have finished your questions, I'll be going home," I told them.
"I'm afraid that's not possible,"
Fisherman said with fake hesitation. "And why not?" I asked.
"We need to have you sign the statement you've made."
I'll sign.
"But first, read over the document to verify that the contents are accurate, word by word. It's extremely important you know what you're signing your name to."
So I read those 40-odd sheets of official police transcriptions. 200 years from now, I couldn't help but think, they might be of some value in reconstructing our era. Pathologically detailed, faultlessly accurate. A real boon to research. The daily habits of an average, single male, a child of his times. The whole exercise of reading it through in this police interrogation room was depressing. But read it I did from beginning to end. Now I could go home. I straightened the stack of papers and said that everything looked in order. Playing with his pen, Fisherman glanced over at Bookish. Bookish pulled a single cigarette from his box of Hope regulars on top of the radiator, lit up, and grimaced into the smoke. I had an awful feeling.
"It's not that simple,"
Bookish spoke in that slow, professional tone reserved for elucidating matters to the unordained.
"You see, the statement's got to be in your own hand."
"In my own hand?"
"Yes, you have to copy everything over in your own handwriting. Otherwise, it's not legally valid."
I looked at the stack of pages. I didn't have the strength to be angry. I wanted to be angry. I wanted to fly into a rage. I wanted to pound on the desk and scream, "You jerks have no right to do this." I wanted to stand up and walk out of there. And strictly speaking, I knew they had no right to stop me. Yes, but I was too tired. Too tired to say a word. Too tired to protest. If I wasn't going to protest, I'd be better off doing what I was told. Faster and easier. "I'm wimping out," I confessed to myself. "I'm worn out and I'm wimping out. Used to be they'd have to tie me down. But then again, their junk food and cigarette smoke and razor that chewed up my face wouldn't have gotten to me either. I was getting weak in my old age. "No way," I surprised myself by saying. "I'm going home. I have the right to go home. You can't stop me."